Welcome back to another episode of The Witch Doctor, a serial fiction podcast brought to you by me, Aquanimous Rex. We are now in Chapter 3 of The Witch Doctor, and things are starting to speed up. Bizarre phenomena, mystery, and even violence has infected Noel. The morning has not yet come, and the night is growing thick with shadows. The switch to a single 30-minute or so long episode a week hasn't seemed to dull people's interest in the story, which is a relief. I just want to make a few announcements real quick before we get into this week's episode. First of all, I was recently interviewed by Aaron Nightgaunt for his podcast, The Ancient Wisdom Salvage Yard. The interview goes in depth on the topic of The Witch Doctor, as well as some of my history, especially in regards to subjects like religion, philosophy, psychology, and mythology. The interview is pretty hefty at about 2 hours long, and I had a blast doing it. You can find the Ancient Wisdom Salvage Yard podcast on iTunes and, I assume, other podcast platforms. Secondly, if you're interested in following The Witch Doctor, seeing related graphic art and teasers you don't get in the show, my other nonfiction articles and other content, you can find me on Facebook at Aquanimous Rex. Lastly, if you are a fan of The Witch Doctor, the number one most helpful thing you could do is to tell your friends about it. In addition, downloading, as opposed to streaming, the episodes, subscribing, and leaving reviews helps to raise visibility of the podcast via various platform algorithms. The more activity the podcast gets, the more easily it is seen and found by others. Anyway, let's get to the story. And thank you for listening. The Witch Doctor, Episode 21, Agent.
Are we there yet?
Artemis asked, exasperated. Kipling stopped in his tracks, a few yards ahead of her, turning his spider head back around his shoulder and tilting it quizzically.
Can't you see we're not there yet? Do you see an oracle around?
Artemis caught up to him, hesitant to get too close to the hairy, prehensile arachnid legs that jutted out from Kipling's head.
It's a joke, genius. It's just something you say.
Kipling turned back to the cobble path that stretched out before them, winding this way and that through the tall grass, the distant monoliths still so far away that they lacked definite shape or texture.
Ah, human jokes. Referential as always.
Kipling chided, continuing to walk. When Artemis had first met the strange being, he had been naked except for a pair of white briefs, his human body like that of an athlete, juxtaposed with the monstrous spider head. Now, Kipling was clothed in a fine, dark suit, which did very little to reduce the dissonance Artemis felt when looking at him. While the entirety of a spider's body made up Kipling's head, this body itself did possess a spider's head, upon which sat a tiny, crooked top hat. The whole aesthetic of her new companion had a way of making Artemis feel queasy and lightheaded. But he had served admirably as a gentleman guide. The hours that they had seemingly spent on the cobble path were largely uneventful. Nearby will-o'-wisps glowed with unearthly light, levitating through the air above and below the tips of the tall grasses that swept out like a vast, verdant sea around them, unending, in every direction. The wisps moved with agency, but to what aims Artemis could not guess. Kipling had warned her that the wisps sustained themselves off of guiding lost souls into the grasses or other forbidden areas, places which would ensnare and trap the wanderer.
The wisps are idiots. All you have to do is ignore them. If anything, they show you where not to tread.
Kipling had explained, though he added,
though, there are a lot of things that look like wisps. So, it's hard to say. I mean, are you going to just let little glowing scamps dictate your own life to you? Carpe diem, and all that.
Kipling would surprise Artemis with his references to the human world, following them up with an immense ignorance of all things mundi. Artemis didn't bother to ask him how he knew what carpe diem meant, or if he knew what it meant at all, or was merely parroting something he had picked up. Her mind was awash in questions and anxieties. She knew that she was on a quest to rescue someone, but was unable to contrive a method to do so. Artemis didn't like to admit to herself that, at this juncture, it felt like she was the one who needed saving. A feeling she was not going to communicate to Kipling, strange and alien as he was. They walked, and walked, and walked some more. The steady pace of their travel seemed to bring no closer the tall structures on the horizon, made hazy by distance. At first, Artemis had asked her companion about them, but he seemed as ignorant as she about what the monoliths were, or who lived there, and the spider-headed man seemed to rely half on faith and half on trope savviness for his reasons on pressing forward.
The Oracle is probably over there, because it's, spooky. Oracles love spooky places. Keeps out the riffraff.
He had explained to her.
I mean, a spooky place behind a forbidden and dangerous place? A perfect recipe for what we're looking for.
When Artemis had asked what exactly was so dangerous about the purple-hued grasslands, Kipling seemed to struggle with explanation.
Well, it's not likely to kill you. You're human, after all, and where we are, it is hard to die. But I would be pretty bummed out if I had to wander an endless grassland for the rest of eternity. And you never know what's out there, hidden. There are a lot of things that are scarier than death, Sheriff. Or so I've heard.
The forest full of those strange, spiraled trees had faded behind them as they progressed, but the horizon stayed ever distant. As she moved, Artemis tried remembering what it was that she had encountered in the forests she could remember running in. She tried to figure out exactly what had happened, but was only ever given the weakest of impressions, as if there were a part of her mind cordoned off, kept locked up and hidden from sight, the key thrown away. Kipling was singing a song to himself, a rhyme that Artemis had never heard before. His high-pitched voice echoed over the grasslands.
Oh, the Queen of Hearts, she made some tarts all on a summer's day. The Knave of Hearts, he stole those tarts and with them ran away. The King of Hearts called for those tarts and beat the Knave full sore. The Knave of Hearts brought back those tarts and said he'll never steal no more.
The tune irked Artemis, who scowled at the spider-headed man from behind his back.
Hey, stop!
Artemis called to her companion, and he halted immediately.
We're not getting any closer. We're just getting farther away from where we came from. Which, by the way, doesn't make any fucking sense. I've got a job to do, and this isn't making it any easier. What's the fucking deal, dude?
Kipling turned and bowed to her, doffing his small top hat and genuflecting as if he were her loyal butler.
I understand your frustration, Sheriff, but I cannot make it go any faster.
He righted himself and pointed to their destination.
I could get there in a matter of moments. It is not far. However, I would have to leave you behind, and I had assumed that you would not appreciate that. There is no guarantee I could find my way back, after all, or that the Oracle would even deal with me.
Kipling lowered his voice, seemingly sheepish, as if embarrassed by what he was about to say.
You see, Sheriff, you're the one with all the baggage. It's weighing you down, slowing your movements. I am as carefree as a songbird, and these plains are no hindrance to me.
Artemis put her hand to her forehead, nursing the phantom of a headache.
What does that even mean? What baggage? I'm traveling as light as I can, short of stripping down to my underwear.
Kipling shook his large head, legs swaying.
Not that kind of baggage. Spiritual baggage. Psychic baggage. You've got so much weighing on your mind that, well, we're slowed, snail-like even. Drop the baggage and maybe we'd get there a little faster.
Artemis wanted to scream.
Got a lot on my mind, because someone is in danger. I don't know who, but I know I'm supposed to help them. I want to go home. I want out of this fucking place.
Kipling said nothing, and Artemis found herself unable to read any emotion in his 8 spherical eyes. She could see her reflection looking back at her, warped and made odd-looking in his black orbs. Artemis sighed.
Listen, I'm not pissed at you, okay? You've been very...
She paused, trying to think of an adequate word. Helpful? Informative?
Accommodating. But I need to get out of here as quickly as possible. If you think the Oracle can help, and that you can get to her faster alone, do it. If she can tell us how to get me out, go alone. If that's what it takes, I'll stay here and you can go talk to her. I'll be okay.
Kipling's face looked neutral as always, though his human mouth did bite at his human lips.
I am not sure that I will be able to find my way back, Sheriff, or that the Oracle will grant me an audience. But it is true that I can move much more quickly than yourself here.
They stood there, grass swaying around them, feet solidly planted on the cobble path. Will-o'-wisps glided in and out of their vision, some floating high above the ground as if stars in the sky.
If I am to go, it would help me to find you again should we create a bond. Though I have never done so with a particular human before, the general methodology is known to me.
Artemis raised an eyebrow.
Bond? Like, we need to hang out and talk about our childhoods?
Kipling didn't respond and stuck out his human hand.
Grab my hand and follow my instructions.
Artemis moved to comply, but stopped.
Is it permanent? This bonding?
Kipling answered her without moving his own outstretched hand.
Only as permanent as you want it to be. All you have to do is take my hand and I'll explain the rest.
Artemis reached out, her hand clasping his. The feeling of cool, smooth skin sending a jolt of apprehension through her body.
Once upon a time,
Kipling started,
there was a lost soul that was trapped in merciless webbing. They had wandered into it quite by accident, and every struggle to escape entwined the soul in its sticky prison even more thoroughly. The soul kicked and the soul screamed, but to no effect. The strands of inevitability were strong, and they had her. After some time, a spider descended upon the web, looking at the little lost soul. Little soul, the spider said, why do you struggle if it only entraps you? Why do you kick? Why do you scream? Have you decided that the threads of fate are to be snipped at your hand by your shears? Little soul, why do you not rest? For you have come far and are at your journey's end.
Artemis noticed that Kipling's hand began to warm, almost like a stone left out in the sun. The spider-headed man continued his tale, and a gaggle of a half dozen luminescent wisps darted behind him into the grass.
The little soul snarled at the spider, and its struggling increased in intensity tenfold. Spider, the lost soul said, why do you taunt me with yarns about fate? You are tedious, and I must get to my business over yonder. If you release me, I will give you a piece of myself. I will never forget your kindness, and I will tell everyone I can to do right by you and your kind. I will tell them to give you peace and quiet to quell their shrieking and hold their swatting hands. I will give you a piece of myself, and you may come with me, a home for you in myself.
Now Kipling's hand felt almost burning in her own, Artemis thought, and she glanced down at her hand and noticed that from between the seams of their joining was a faint green light, which pulsed and sporadically began to brighten and fade.
The spider shook his head and said to the little lost soul, "No, I cannot release you, for the web of dependent arising is not of my making. But perhaps we can walk a little longer along its skein. I will take up your offer, but I cannot grant you freedom from the web. I can only offer a journey."
Kipling looked straight at Artemis, and she raised her head to meet his eyes.
"Now you, Sheriff, how does the story end?"
Without hesitation, Artemis spoke, the words flowing from her as if not her own.
The little lost soul accepted the spider's offer, and they went forth together.
The light between their clasped hands faded with her last word, and Kipling retracted his hand. Artemis did the same and saw that upon her palm was a symbol like a stylized web, written upon her skin in the same glowing green light, and it stayed there for a moment before darkening and disappearing.
"We have created a bond. It should let me find you once more, even in these shifting lands. Just promise me that when I am gone, you will not leave the cobbled path, not to the left, not to the right. If you must walk, go forward, do not go back. And please, if you can, try to let go of some of your baggage."
And with that, Kipling turned and began to walk away.
"Baggage. Psh,"
she muttered grumpily, watching as her acquaintance quickly disappeared from sight. Though he did not seem to be moving particularly fast, the grass seemed to grow upward, and he descended as if the path sloped downward out of view. Artemis put her hands on her hips and rotated in a complete circle, taking in her surroundings. No movement save for the wisps and the wind in the tall grass. Artemis stood there, tapping her finger against the side of her hip. Her back ached and she was already growing bored. Artemis knew that she couldn't even be sure that the Oracle, or Kipling for that matter, would be able to help her. A small voice inside her mind argued with her that they weren't really real, that this place wasn't real, that nothing unreal could help her with the very real issues which she could not remember, that had occurred where she could not remember being. "You're dreaming," it said, "you've been drugged," but this voice was weak and unconvincing. Artemis could see that despite the uncanny nature of the place, that her surroundings and the otherworldly events that she had witnessed were as real as wherever she had come from. "What do you think a hallucination looks like?" asked the tiny voice inside of her. And Artemis envisioned a small, lawyerly man sitting on her shoulder. No angel of conscience, but an agent of rationalization.
"Agent of rationality, huh? I like that. Usually people just refuse to acknowledge my existence, except for when they're telling me to shut up. More's the pity."
The small voice that had been in her head now came from her right shoulder, and when Artemis turned her head to look, she saw that the little lawyerly man she had imagined was now real. Quite unlike an actual human, the lawyerly man looked smushed and clay-like, his tiny brown clothes a caricature of a suit, a dime-sized briefcase in one hand.
"Listen, as you are my client, I am forced to warn you about the actions you are taking. You stand a very real risk of making things worse for yourself. I'm here to work for you, but I need you to let me do my job. Help me help you. This place isn't real, Sheriff. I'm not real. You tripped and you fell and you conked your noggin real bad. This is all a hallucination. You're waiting for a non-existent freak to take you to an imaginary oracle.
The tiny, lawyerly man opened his briefcase and retrieved a piece of paper.
But since I'm here, I've been meaning to catch up with you on a whole manner of backlog cases. As your agent, I'm responsible for getting your attention and authorization before we can really start the process of getting you up to date. You desperately need to be updated on your current, let us say, cognitive economy.
Artemis reached over slowly, and the small earthen man who claimed to be her agent shrank away from her.
What are you doing? Unhand me, miss, or I'm afraid I'll have to file a complaint with HR. Oof!
With the back of his brown jacket pinched between two fingers, Artemis held the microman, briefcase still in hand and flailing, a few inches from her face. Her eyes, which must have appeared massive to him, squinted.
I never hired you. I've never met you before in my life.
The rational agent stiffened and looked offended.
Well, I've been your faithful employee for many years now. So if you don't remember, that's on you, miss. If you don't want to go over some of these past cases, such as your citations. Ah, yes. See here.
The agent held up the paper he had taken from his briefcase, clutched in one hand.
The citations for unreasonable occupation and social capital destitution, relatively recently accrued. Very steep fines when left ignored, miss. Very steep fines. Which I had warned you about before you decided to start play-acting Sheriff of Nowheresville. But the client always knows best. We can put those cases off. They've been on the backlog for years now, anyway. I just thought since we were discussing your predicaments, I'd mention it.
The lawyerly man trailed off, looking down at the ground he was suspended over.
Please don't drop me on those rocks.
Artemis lowered the tiny man into the palm of her other hand, and he sat there looking up at her, expectant.
I never hired you, so you're in the wrong place. I've got pressing matters to deal with. And frankly, you don't even know my name.
She stared at the agent, not taking her eyes off of him.
What is my name anyway? You're my agent, right? So you should know my name. Not just my job title. So say it, and we can talk about how this place isn't real.
The little man gaped up at her and began to stutter.
Well, I've never... I'm an agent of rationality, you said so yourself. To think that you would treat me with such utter disrespect.
Cutting him off mid-sentence, Artemis flicked him off of her hand, sending him flying out into the tall grass. She remembered what Kipling had said about the power of names, and the fact that what had appeared to her did not know hers gave her all the confidence she needed to rid herself of the tiny, lawyerly man.
Sorry, dude, but I don't trust one goddamn thing in this place. Not even Spider-Bro. Nothing personal.
Deciding that now was as good as ever, Artemis started walking down the trail to kill time. Without Kipling around, she felt as though she were really making some headway. She began to jog, and then to run. The purple grass sped by her, but the horizon grew no closer. Artemis noticed that she did not tire or grow winded. Sprinting or walking affected her legs and lungs the same, which is not at all. After maybe 15 minutes of all-out sprinting, Artemis halted, hearing something in the grass. She looked, but she could not see from where she was, and so leaned in over the edge of the cobble path. In the grass was the tiny, lawyerly man, whose briefcase had opened up and spilled small scraps of paper around himself. Artemis gasped and backed up into the pathway, a sudden heaviness pressing down upon her from behind, causing her to land on her back, staring up at the dark sky. Artemis saw that something that looked like vines had wrapped themselves around her arms, around her torso, and behind her back. She flailed her legs and rolled over, onto her side. Something was strapped to her back now, though Artemis could not see what. It hung there, and moved in a way reminiscent of sloshing water, as if a giant water skin had fastened itself to her. Artemis brought her legs up, and rolled onto her knees, arms useless and forehead grinding into the cobble path. She pushed herself upward with all of her core and lifted herself up, still kneeling. The thing that had attached itself to her and restrained her arms made no noise, but again shifted as if containing a liquid, almost sending her off balance and falling back to the ground. A quiet rustling noise came from her left side, from the grass, and when Artemis turned her head to look, she saw that the small, lawyerly man, the self-professed agent of rationality, extricated himself from the relative jungle he had been caught in. After fixing his tie, the agent spoke in a voice which sounded much louder than Artemis had assumed it would, given his distance. Only a few feet for her, but seemingly for him, much longer.
If you're going to be here for a few, we really should go over some of the past citations. Let's start with familial issues and feelings of inadequacy and move on from there. If we take them one at a time and approach it in a cool, calm, reasonable manner, I'm sure we can work through your delusions and self-aggrandizements in, oh, at least a fortnight.
This has been The Witch Doctor, Episode 21, Agent, by Equanimous Rex. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for future episodes. Music Attribution. The intro is Come Play With Me by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. The outro is Iron Horse, also by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Both of the songs are licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.